And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News, with Paul Hill.
As part of its larger celebration of the Reformation's 500-year anniversary, Concordia University Chicago in River Forest, Illinois, will be unveiling a new exhibit starting October the 8th, featuring rare first-edition books and Bibles from the 15th, 16th, and 17th centuries. The display, titled Let the Books Tell the Story, will include 35 items from Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Mundelein Seminary at the University of St. Mary of the Lake, Mundelein, Illinois, the Lutheran Church of Theology at Chicago, Wheaton College, Wheaton, Illinois, and the Newbery Library in Chicago. Organized by theme, the display will chart the Reformation legacy and tell its story through the fields of theology, scripture, education, and the fine arts. The collection will include several facsimile editions, but the real attraction will be the rare and authentic first editions of books, such as the Gutenberg Bible, 1455, Erasmus's Greek New Testament, 1519, Martin Luther's seminal works of the 1520s, the Uckleder book, the First Lutheran Congregational Hymnal, 1524, the Augsburg Confession, 1531, the Biblia del Oso, the first Bible printed in Spanish, 1569, the Dresden edition of the Book of Concord, 1580, the Geneva Bible, 1599, and the Bach Bible or Kalov Bible, 1681. These incredible items will bring the Reformation history to life for those who come to view it, said the Reverend Jeffrey Leininger, University pastor and dean of the chapel at Concordia University in Chicago. When these books were first printed, it was the dawn of the age of the printed book. It was all new. Now we find ourselves at the end of the printed book. This is the perfect time to tell the Reformation story through these books themselves, Leininger said. Who owned them? What did they write in them? Where were they printed? Who did they influence? Let the books tell the story. As this event was being conceived, the first item on the list that served as the lead piece for the collection was the Kalov Bible, or Bach Bible. This 1681 edition contains composer J.S. Bach's handwritten reflections, comments, and insights on the scriptures, providing an invaluable commentary on his personal faith and the Lutheran musical legacy that the church also celebrates this year. This exhibit, Leininger said, likely will be the last time this priceless item will ever travel from its home in the archives of Concordia Seminary. In fact, he adds, all the displayed items, worth in total several million dollars, will be treated as the priceless treasures they are while on the Concordia Chicago campus. It is perhaps a rare event that a collection like this, reflecting a collaboration between Protestant, Lutheran, and even Catholic churches, will be made available to the public, noted Leininger. For that reason, there are security concerns to note in order to pull this off, including 24-hour video surveillance, locked and secure cases, environmental controls such as heat and humidity that have to be monitored, and even low lighting. While the exhibit will run through the month of October, the collection will be open to the public October the 28th and 30th, with additional dates likely to be added. Private viewings can also be scheduled. This exhibit is just one of several events Concordia Chicago has planned to celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. On Saturday, October the 28th, the campus will hold a special Reformation 500 Celebration Day event, and October the 30th, an unprecedented interdenominational conversation will feature a panel of Lutheran, Reformed, and Catholic leaders discussing the Reformation and its impact today. The rare book and Bible display will be available for viewing during those two events. We believe these books will have a story to tell, added Leininger. It is a story of God's providence and grace in using Martin Luther to renew the church and recover the Christian gospel for the world. It is also a story of incalculable political, cultural, and societal change well worth exploring and debating. Schools and scholars, congregations and families, all will find something meaningful and moving in viewing this display. Archaeologists say they have found the lost Roman city of Julius in Israel. The birthplace of the men Christians believe were some of the first followers of Jesus has been found in Israel, a team of archaeologists have claimed. Researchers say they may have discovered what they say is the hometown of Peter, Philip, and Peter's brother Andrew, near the Sea of Galilee in northern Israel. Experts have long sought to locate the lost Roman city of Julius, believed to have been built on the ruins of Bethsaida, a Jewish fishing village. The excavations were conducted by the Institute for Galilean Archaeology at Kinneret College in Israel and Nyack College. St. Peter the Apostle, originally named Simeon or Simon, was a disciple of Jesus Christ. He died in around 64 AD in Rome and was recognized in the early Christian church as the leader of the disciples. The Roman Catholic Church venerates St. Peter as the first of its unbroken succession of popes. Peter, a fisherman, was called to be a disciple of Jesus at the beginning of his ministry, according to Christian tradition. He received from Jesus the name Cephas, or the rock, hence Peter from the Latin Petra. First century Roman historian Flavius Josephus wrote that Julius was built around 30 AD on the ruins of Bethsaida, where the Gospel of John says Peter was born. Experts have focused their search for the city on three different sites. The excavations were conducted by the Institute for Galilean Archaeology at Kinneret College in Israel and directed by Dr. Mordecai Avium, together with Dr. R. Stephen Notley from Nyack College, New York, who is the excavation's academic director. Dr. Avium told AFP that one of the sites, the only one so far to be excavated, was believed to be the correct site. He said, "We have uncovered fragments of pottery, coins, and the remains of a public bath, which tends to prove that it was not a small village, but a town which may correspond to Julius." First century Roman historian Flavius Josephus wrote that Julius was built around 30 AD. "Based on these findings, we believe this site is likely to be located at the site of Bethsaida. The site, not far from the Jordan River, is a few hundred meters from Lake Tiberias. Water levels would have been far higher during the first century." Work is also being carried out on another site a few miles away, Avium added. He said he hoped further excavations would reveal evidence from pre-Roman times, including ancient Jewish remains, which could help verify whether the site is Bethsaida. The site is near the land where Luke's Gospel reports the miracle of Jesus feeding 5,000 people with only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. 2 other apostles, Philip and Peter's brother Andrew, are also believed to have been born or lived in Bethsaida. It is hoped further excavations will reveal evidence from pre-Roman times. The site will not be immediately open to the public, he said. St. Andrew is believed to have died around 60 or 70 AD in Patras, Greece. Like his brother Peter, Andrew was a fisherman. Early church legends say he undertook missionary activity in the area around the Black Sea. A 4th century account reports his death by crucifixion, and late medieval tales state the cross was X-shaped. This gives the flag of Scotland, which Andrew is the patron saint, its characteristic shape. St. Philip, who is believed to have died in the 1st century AD, makes frequent appearances in the Gospel according to John. He is said to have answered Jesus' call to follow me and brought St. Nathanael to Jesus. With St. Andrew, he is also written to have brought word to Jesus that certain Greeks had asked to see him. A Lutheran minister is taking an unconventional approach to ministry by setting up a booth on the streets of Manhattan and charging 5 cents for spiritual help, much like Lucy from the Peanuts comic strip. In other words, the pastor is in. Pastor Gregory Fryer of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in New York told the Christian Post in an interview that the idea to do this just dawned on him one day. "I do this for fun, but also for real," Fryer said. "Step forward and offer advice like she did," he noted. "Likewise, it could be said of me that I'm excessively bold to put up my pastor is in booth, except I know that I have no wisdom to share with people. But I figure the Bible does, and the teachings of the church do, and I have devoted my career to studying these things, and I'm glad to share what I have learned." Fryer told Christian Post that people might be surprised to learn about the number of New Yorkers who appear as though they have it all together, dressed to perfection on their way to work, who are willing to sit down and talk with him right there on the pavement. His outside the four walls of the church approach leads passerby to view him as more accessible, and he's learned to have a box of tissues handy because many people freely unburden their souls and cry. "When they sit down there on that stool, it's as though all the world fades away," Fryer said. While he doesn't actually charge 5 cents to listen and pray with people, some do leave a donation. People speak on a big variety of topics, from "I think I'm getting a cold, could you pray for me?" to "I have learned I may have only 6 months to live." In general, humanity has hopes and dreams and fears, setbacks and sorrows weight on their heart. "I try to encourage them via Jesus and the faith of the church," he said. Prior 65 said one of his most moving encounters took place on election day. It was very interesting to me that people did stop by to talk about the election, but they did not ask for prayer for any particular candidate. Instead, they asked for prayer for our land, for unity of our people, for peace in our hearts. One woman who stopped by asked, "Would you pray for me that I not hate people who vote on the other side?" "I thought that was a wise prayer," he said. "Not only do I hope that more churches will do this, but also that each of us, as individuals, will do it too. This is a form of love we can provide for our neighbours, that we will make ourselves available to listen as carefully as we can, and then to answer in a godly and encouraging way," Fryer said. "It is but a single instance of what clergy can do. We listen to people and answer back as faithfully as we can," he added. "The booth gives me some satisfaction in believing that our God looks on it and smiles." Following last week's Lutheran Radio UK reported study on atheists struggling to see if anything positive about religion because unemotional logic rules their brains, another study has claimed that both religious people and atheists naturally assume that immoral people, such as serial killers, are probably atheists. The study finds that this prejudice against atheists exists in most of the 13 countries studied, both religious and secular. Researchers claim that even though religiosity has dropped in many countries, millennia of religious exposure mean many people believe morality requires a faith. Research published last month claimed that religious people's minds are dominated by emotion and do not think analytically. This makes believers cling to their views even when evidence proves them wrong, the study claimed. Meanwhile, militant atheists are completely negative about religion because they have analytical brains, according to researchers. The study warned that untempered empathy can be dangerous. People are almost twice as likely to view extreme immorality as representative of atheists than of believers, the researchers from the University of Kentucky found. Atheist participants also showed the same prejudice against non-believers. The research, published this week in Nature, tested the perception of a link between immorality and atheism in more than 3,000 people from 13 different countries on 5 continents. These countries range from the very religious societies, including the United Arab Emirates and India, to very secular, for example China and the Netherlands. Our work showed that people across 13 countries tended to assume that violent, sadistic villains, truly evil stuff, probably don't believe in a god, study lead author and psychologist Professor Will Gervais told Mail Online. "This is striking because it conflicts strongly with what science is telling us, that morality is complex and comes from many sources, not solely from religious belief." To measure prejudice against atheists, they provided participants with a description of an immoral person who initially tortures animals and eventually kills people for thrills. Half of the participants were then asked whether it is more probable that the perpetrator was either a teacher or a teacher who is a religious believer. For the other half of participants, the latter option was changed to a teacher who does not believe in God. The researchers then measured how frequently people chose each option in each group. Researchers say the study supports earlier work, which shows people have two brain networks, one for empathy and one for analytic thinking. These two networks are in tension with each other. In healthy people, their thought process switches between the two, choosing to choose the appropriate network depending on the issues they are considering. In someone who is militantly religious, the empathetic network dominates, while in the non-religious dogmatist mind, the analytical network rules. Although the study looks at the difference between the worldview of people who are religious and non-religious dogmatists, it could apply to any strongly held core beliefs. These could be eating habits, whether to be vegan, vegetarian or omnivore, or to political opinions and beliefs about climate change. The study reveals that natural moral suspicion of atheists is culturally widespread, appearing in both secular and religious societies, and among both believers and atheists. Church signs are not always read, but the ones with a stab of humour or a pointed message usually get their point across. An example of signs, mostly from the US, follows. An Anglican church wrote on their sign, "Adam and Eve, the first person to not read the apple terms and conditions." A heat-suffering pastor in a Virginia Baptist church wrote, "Whoever stole our air conditioning units, keep one. It is hot where you are going." On the subject of heat, a Catholic church put up on his Illinois sign, "Too hot to keep changing sign. Sin bad, Jesus good. Details inside." A Baptist with a wry sense of humour wrote, "Forgive your enemies, it messes with their heads." A North London church signed, "Love is grand, divorce is 20 grand." In New York, a Baptist wrote, "The fact that there is a highway to hell and only a stairway to heaven says a lot about anticipated traffic numbers." A Methodist, obviously an animal lover, wrote, "Be the kind of person your pet thinks you are." A Baptist, perhaps with his eye on the gay scene, wrote, "Jesus had two dads, and he turned out fine." And a Canadian gospel church wrote, "Under the same management for 2,000 years." Lastly, back to the weather, and the Zion Lutheran Church wrote, "Satan called, he wants his weather back." And finally, a new bride allegedly pulled a gun from under her wedding dress to threaten a husband just hours after they were married. Police say they arrested Kate Elizabeth Pritchard, 25, after she got into a heated spat with her partner outside a hotel in Tennessee. She brandished the handgun at him and fired into the air, witnesses say, before trying to hide the weapon when the police showed up. Police Sergeant Kyle Evans said, responding officers let the husband know the honeymoon was over and his new wife was going to jail. Pritchard has been charged with aggravated domestic assault and is out on a $15,000 bond, local TV station News Channel 5 reports. My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.